Hello, I'm Bruce Selvery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. Let's talk TikTok. One recent trend on the platform related to your money is called girl math. And I roll my eyes about that phrase, but it's basically a way to justify certain spending habits. I am both curious and enraged by this idea. The math guru, Vanessa Vicaria, will be here to talk about it. I don't know. I think she probably will be enraged too. It is super easy to find a date online if you're looking. Less so, a research grant. Sherry Shannon Vanstone is founder and CEO of an organization called Profound Impact. And she's going to take us through the platform that they have developed to match academics with funders. And literally, it includes a swipe right. Then, what it means to be a vegan financial advisor. Yeah, you heard that right. A vegan financial advisor. Justin Manning, that is how he describes himself and his work. And we're going to talk about how he integrates veganism into his financial planning practice. Plus, a new rewards program that has you earn rewards that you can use to buy, air quotes, buy better rates on fixed income investments, among other things. We're going to speak to Phil Taylor from Duka about how this program works. This is Moolala, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. So I was scrolling the TikTok machine, as I do rarely, aka almost never, and I saw a video, I saw a post about something called girl math. I was immediately annoyed, maybe enraged, but mostly annoyed, even though I didn't know what it was referring to. I just hated the phrase. So it is a trend on TikTok related to personal finance, and it's where people talk about certain and justify certain spending habits. And while some would say it is a fun and lighthearted way to talk about money, others have some concerns about the term. So we are joined by Vanessa Vicaria. She is the math guru. She is the author of Math Hacks, and she is in Toronto today. Hello, Vanessa.
I'm already annoyed and mad.
The reason I'm not so annoyed is because you and I get to have this conversation. If I was talking to anybody else, I think I would be incredibly annoyed. First, let's explain. So I got activated by the phrase, but we're going to talk about the phrase. Before we talk about the phrase, what are they referring to when they use the phrase?
I would like to just say, benefit of the doubt, I think this trend started off well-meaning. Okay. I think the idea was that, girls, women, non-males are always kind of like prodded for being like, oh, you're so financially irresponsible. You're spending like $2,000 on a purse and $1,000 on your hair. Like, that's so ridiculous. And girl math started out as a way to be like, and tell me if I'm using this term right, but I think I am, a way to like amortize the cost, right? So to be like, am I right? Like, you spend $500 on your hair, you're going to have that hairstyle for 500 days. A day. Is that amortization?
Yeah, you're spreading it out over the course of time. Sure.
Okay. So that's how it started. And it was started to be like, see, so this isn't really that ridiculous of an expenditure. But very quickly, it morphed to such tenants like, well, if I buy anything under $5, it's free. If I preload my Starbucks gift card with $25 and then I use that gift card to buy coffee, it's free. It quickly morphed into ways to justify spending that are not math. It turned into that. So basically now, like, the trend girl math now, if you look it up, are just a bunch of ways to justify spending that are incorrect and not mathematically sound.
We have known each other for a number of years now. You have written books. You have run a very successful tutoring service. You are a deeply passionate advocate for math, but for women and math and young girls and math, and addressing this confidence gap that often exists for girls and math. How do you layer all that, like your life's work, into this trite little TikTok trend?
First of all, I feel personally attacked. Second of all, like, you might not remember this, but my entire master's degree is in mathematics and gender. My thesis was called Imagining a World Where Paris Hilton Loves Math. And it is specifically about how media representations of women and math are actually the catalyst for so many women choosing not to participate in math, not having the confidence, feeling they have to choose between being like the cheerleader who isn't smart in all the movies and the nerdy friend. So when I see a trend like this, I just think, cool, so I've done nothing with my life.
Right.
There's all these initiatives to help women, you know, feel confident in STEM and math. And then you see a trend like this and it's like 1,000 steps backwards to be like, haha, but girls, they still can't do math and they definitely can't manage their money.
Right. Like I should have been a baker in Thornbury. That I would have made a difference in, but instead.
Right. That would have been nice.
Now, reading some of the comments, I saw one that said, older people take the fun out of this stuff. So
were they talking about me?
They were not talking about, I don't know if they were talking about you. It wasn't an article that you were referenced in.
Fine.
How do you address that?
So when I started posting about it on TikTok, I got a lot of comments like that, like not about my age, which is very ageist, but I got a lot of comments being like, haha, I can tell you're not a girl's girl. Like you have no sense of humor, this kind of thing. And what my response is consistent always with this kind of stuff. My response is this: the reason something is funny often, not always, but often relies on a harmful stereotype. So for example, if this, and I'm just making this up, but I have a feeling if this was called boy math, that it would not be as funny because there is no stereotype out there that boys suck at math or can't manage their finances. I have a feeling that it wouldn't have gone off the same way. So what I try to explain when people say that is, you know, there's a difference between being funny and then being funny at the expense of reinforcing a stereotype that has been harmful for generation after generation. And it's like, there's lots of funny things. Find something else to be funny about. And actually, someone had said, and I loved this, they had said, if we had just called this payday math, it might have been funny. Because a lot of guys are like, wait, I use that exact, all this girl math stuff I use as a guy. So like, I just am like, I mean, I'd be annoyed anyway, because I'd be like, this is not math, but I'd be way less annoyed than being like, and now you're attacking an entire gender's ability to do math.
Yeah. And it is kind of, for me as a gay man, ridiculous that it's okay to have that stereotype. If they were to call it gay math, there would be a huge uproar, right? Like,
totally.
But that this is somehow acceptable. I just can't even.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
Let's rename it. Let's call, if you were to rename it, I've got a name in my mind, but maybe you've got one. What if we called it short-circuited math? Because a lot of these justifications are like, this doesn't make sense. Like there's a behavioral finance reason why you're justifying this in your mind that makes no sense. Do you have a nice little cliche name that you could rename the behavior? Because the behavior is real and the behavior is insightful.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's like, okay, now that we're done being mad about the girl thing, now I'm mad about the use of the word math because it is not math. But I guess it's fake math. That's
yes.
My name for it is like fake finance math. It's not like, I don't want people thinking this is actual math. Like it's like,
that's right.
Math doesn't mean
that's
lying.
Very insightful. It's more short-circuited decision-making. So I'm buying the thing because here's how I've thought it through in my fallacious way. I've thought it through this way and it makes sense for me. It's like how I would do these things on food. Like, you know, I am fully allowed to eat 50 Snickers bars because I went for a walk around the block. Like sure. I fully burned off the calories of 50 Snickers bars because I got out of bed. Like it's a decision-making thing versus me tabulating the calorie count
right.
and the offset of the exercise.
Okay, but that's called something. What is that? You know what? I actually read that this is a site, like if we just take it out of TikTok, isn't this, and I wanted to ask you about this, this is called mental accounting, isn't it?
Yes,
isn't this
it is.
So maybe it's something with like accounting in it or like.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. You're right. It's like, let's not call it math. It is about money. So we can say the word spending or like whatever, but then the first word, the adjective has to have something to do with the fact that it's like erroneous. Like it's not correct.
Yes. Yes.
You're in denial.
When you look at this behavior, was there something in the examples that people brought that you thought, oh yeah, I totally do that?
So first of all, this idea of like, whatever my fake amortization or whatever is going on. I do that all the time. So like, I right. actually do that. I sure. don't, I do not do things like if it's under $5, it's free. I don't even understand where that, you know, if I use cash, another one, if I use cash to pay for it, it's free because no money has left my account. That doesn't make sense. But I do often justify purchases being like, okay, well, like I ate like lunch that was $30 that was super expensive, but then the rest of the day I only had $10 worth of things. So that's like $40 over the whole day, which means it's only really like $13.33 a meal if I divide it in three. I'll do stuff like that.
Right, right. Yeah, and I have a friend who is super nuts about the like double points days at a particular retailer. And I think, no, no, do not go to that retailer ever because you're always going to spend more. Even if it's quadruple million the points, go to a discounter and you're going to get your products for much cheaper.
And also, yes, 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 just yes.
How do you find you in, because you're very good on social media. You are very, very good. How do you engage in a way that doesn't make you absolutely crazy? Because you jump in, you jump on the in on these conversations, sure. you have a voice. How do you walk that line?
I guess it's like funny that you think that because that's not what's happening. Like it does make me crazy. I'm actually on a hiatus from social media where I'm only allowed to post things and I'm not allowed to look at things and people have to like, it does make me crazy because even as soon as I jumped in on the girl math thing, right away, the first thing I got was an insult. Like the first thing I got was, I remember the comment, tell you're not a girl's girl. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, I was so enraged. Like, and then it was like the first like five comments were people being like, you have no sense of humor. I can tell you're not a girl's girl. Like you're ugly. Like, of course you spend no money on your hair. See what, like, you know what I mean? People are so mean. So, and like, no, I do not handle it well actually at all. So I don't know. I'm glad that it's deceiving, but no, it's hard because I want to weigh in on, you know, I think what started helping is, I waited on it, but then other people started saying this. And then like you contacted me to talk, like, do you know what I mean? Then I had a couple of radio interviews. Then it became more of a thing where it's like, when you're speaking, especially on TikTok, which is where this trend started, it is like the worst place to jump into anything because as you know, it can end up on the wrong side of the talk. And then it's not a good vibe. So I don't know. I think it's just like a numbers thing. It's like, I'm like, I hope that it's going to encourage other people to jump in. And then there's just power in numbers. And the more of us there are saying it, because even I will say in real life, I've had arguments with most of my friends who are like, but it's kind of funny. And I have to be like, okay, but listen, and they'll kind of convert at the end. But I think with a trend like this, it's a bit harder, like very quickly. I don't know if you remember this, but last year there was a TikTok trend. And this was the whole trend. You're either pretty or you're good at math. And all the trend is a girl shows up, since we're using video, I'll show you what they do. They go like this.
Yes.
What am I? That was it.
Oh my God.
That was it.
I can't even. That is the time we have, Vanessa. Okay, I hate that we have to wrap up. Vanessa Vicaria is the math guru. She's the author of Math Hacks. I'm not even going to use the phrase because I think we have proven that it doesn't need any more airtime. Here's how I'm going to describe our conversation in this back announce that I'm doing right now. She joined me to talk about mental accounting and the sometimes problematic behavior that people exhibit when it comes to their money. How's that? Huh?
Get on to put that on TikTok. Put that on TikTok right now.
I should put that on TikTok, except for then I'd have to go on TikTok. Vanessa, thank you so much for your time, for your insight, for your warmth, and for your great hair. Because I can see it. It's great.
I love it.
Take care, Vanessa.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Coming up next on Moolala, Profound Impacts founder and CEO, Sherry Shannon Vanstone, is going to talk about some of the barriers that women face, kind of funny coming on the backs of the girl math conversation, but barriers that female entrepreneurs face when it comes to accessing funding. Later, we're going to talk about a new rewards program from Duka. Phil Taylor's going to be here. He's going to talk about how you can get a better rate on fixed income investments, almost like you can earn a free fritter at Timmy's. If you liked what you heard today, don't miss an episode ever. And to ensure the insurance to ensure that that never happens to you, go to moolala.ca. You can listen to past episodes. You can also subscribe to this show on all of the platforms, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Prime, wherever you listen, download an episode, listen to the episode, leave a review, subscribe, all those sorts of things.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolah La, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit. As I said, the counseling is free and judgment free. One of the most amazing things about the internet is that it has made the market much, much more efficient. The market for almost everything. It is so easy now to find a hotel to book, Expedia, a rare comic to buy, eBay, a partner to date, Bumble, Tinder, Grindr, all that stuff. It has also made it easier for academics to connect with research grants, admittedly a less sexy service than some of the others that I might have mentioned, but important nonetheless. Profound Impact is a female-founded company that helps academics and industry researchers find the perfect funding match. Founder and CEO Sherry Shannon Vanstone joins us now to talk about it. She's in Campbellville, Ontario. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce. Great to be here today.
How did you identify the need to reduce the friction between academics and their funding sources?
In fact, we talked to several of the universities in this area. Well, for Laurier in particular at Waterloo, we were there selling some other products, and we just asked them, what keeps you up at night? We asked the vice president of research, and he said, funding. We need more funding, and we need to be able to move forward from spreadsheets, you know, doing this manually. And we said, okay, well, let's see what's out there. So we helped them do a market validation study. We found out there really weren't very effective tools that were available. So we, being a Profound Impact, was already into data and analytics and AI. And we said, well, we can develop the solution. And we did.
And I made the reference to dating apps, but you literally swipe right on a grant opportunity?
Yes, you can swipe, or you can also say you're not interested too and swipe the other way. So
that's great.
What it is that the researcher receives the email, it's targeted, the match is made, you know, purposely, intentionally, and targeted to them. They don't have to look through a list of 10 matches. They get one, and they can say yes or no to it. And the communication flow and the matching is all done very quite effectively.
Now, this topic is a little away from what we normally do on Moolah La, but because so many academics really struggle to find the, I'm using air quotes here, the income to fund the research, I thought it was fitting. And I also love that it's a unique take at solving a problem that exists in lots of different categories, in nonprofit, in academia, in lots of different areas. Tell me first how the people with the money engage with the platform, because that seems like a harder sell than the people who want the money.
Well, we're very, very proactive on that part. Most funding opportunities are publicly available. They want people to find the funding. So we ingest all of that data into our platform, and we continuously update it on an ongoing basis. It for the private foundations and some specific others, we do have to contact the foundations to obtain their approval to import their data into our platform. But all are welcoming to do that because they want researchers to find the funding. And they want also great matches. They want to have effective use of the research dollar.
What are some of the variables that each side would be considering? So in dating, it's you know, long walks and fires. It's they need to be 6'2" or, you know, blonde or from a particular part of the country. I don't know. There's lots of things that people put in dating profiles. What do you put in a funding profile?
In a funding profile, we include the researcher's previous publications, their previous grants. If maybe they're switching areas, so it may not even be relevant, then they have to provide that information. Maybe they were in cryptographic algorithms now, and their cryptocurrency is their research area. So what we do is we take their profile, we take their common CV, which is, you know, their curriculum vitae, and we take all of that, and then they also can massage the data if needed. We pull out some keywords, something very specific to them, to so that they're unique. It could also be gender, it could also be location. Many grants are gender specific, and many are also geographically focused. So we have to pull all of that in. And then once we look at the grant, we look at the eligibility requirements, we compare them, and then the matching happens with our algorithms. And also it's machine learning algorithms. So the more the matches we get and the more people are swiping right to say, yes, this was a good match, the more we learn from the algorithms. Also, we learn from the not accepting it or swiping left too.
How do you factor in some of the ethical issues that are present when it comes to funding academic research? And I'll oversimplify to use examples that we've seen over the course of time, like drug company research, funding pharmacology or oncology, or energy companies funding research into fossil fuels or other, other climate change initiatives. There's questions there that wouldn't be present in other areas. How do you factor those in?
Well, one of the things is that we don't factor them in. So they don't become a part of the equation, meaning that we're not influenced in the match by who the funder is. So I think that's a clearer, unbiased way of doing these matches. As an individual, the researcher has the option to not move forward on this match if they see who the researcher, who the funding organization is, and they do not want to move forward with the research in this area. But I think using AI and machine learning and taking human beings out of it, we get a better and unbiased match.
Mm. How do you make your money as an organization?
We are a software as a service, annual subscription model.
And who is the who has the subscription? Is it the person looking for the money or the organization offering the funding?
We work with universities, Office of Research and faculties, and they pay the subscription. We also have a direct to researchers, which is an individual subscription at a very low cost per month.
Your operation principally in Canada at this point, correct?
Correct. We just are preparing to launch in the U.S. We have about 10 clients in the U.S. Under negotiations at this time. So we're getting ready to launch in the U.S. We're excited about that.
What are some of the differences, the nuances that will be required for you to offer your service in other countries, not just the U.S.? Because boy, higher education in Canada is very, very different than in the U.S. The endowments are enormous. The role of government is very, very different. What have you learned so far just as you get set to launch?
There's a lot more money there.
Yeah.
There's more opportunities. And we find that we're always bringing in new opportunities into our database. So we are prepping with our official launch in January 2024 into the U.S. We have to be prepared to have a more robust, I won't say robust, more opportunities. So we have to go out and ingest a lot more data and stay on top of it. There are some other nuances I won't go into it. Some of the workflow has to change. Is what we're learning. Mm. But the one thing is, it's mostly all English. Right now we're getting ready to launch a French version here in Canada, and then we'll figure out about what other languages we need to offer the solution. But right now, Canada, U.S., English, the majority of funding opportunities are offered in English worldwide. And so not a lot. It's not a lot of changes, but there are some subtle ones. Yes.
Profound Impact came onto our radar because of some good press around new efforts to fund companies with primarily with female founded companies that with the help of primarily female investors. Tell us about what this latest round of funding means for you. I mean, surely it means something practical, but I wonder, what does it mean philosophically?
Well, philosophically, it's a huge shift, and it's a shift that I've been ranting about for the last year. I've been I call it my soapbox. I get on these podcasts and interviews, and I'm ranting about the lack of funding for female founders, and it's only like 2% last year in Canada, and even worse in the U.S. at this time, and that's crazy. But what, you know, I can rant and rave about it because there is something intrinsically biased in the system.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, how can we fix it? Well, I said, forget it. I'm not going to try to fix the old, the boys club, VCs. There's only 11% of women in the VC firms in Canada. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go after this group of funders that has not been tapped. And these are women who have wealth, have the money to invest, but have never invested, whether pre-seed, angel, or wherever. And just focusing on them, I opened up this whole, I didn't do it on my own, but I heard other people talk about it, I talk about it, and I went out and did it. And we were oversubscribed on our funding. We wanted to raise $3 million. We raised 3.125. And what I was most excited about it is that it was first time female investors that did. And now there's a study that came out about a month ago from an organization called The 51. It's talking about the 51% of our population, which are female. And they put out a report that estimates that we can add, by tapping into women as angel investors, we can add $3.22 trillion to the VC capital available globally.
Wow. Just one last question before we go. What needs to happen for this to 10x the awareness, the engagement, all those sorts of things? Because it really feels like this is not the first conversation I've heard about the challenge and some of the solutions on female-founded companies. What takes it to an entirely different level, in your view?
We need a huge momentum on this. We need to get it going and roll it out and talk about it all the time. We do need to educate women on the funding side, give them opportunity to fund these, be an angel investor and understand what that is, but also we need to be talking about it. And I appreciate this time with you today, Bruce, to amplify this. There are some activities that we're doing here in Canada and US to try to amplify it even more. And I say, we just keep talking about it, bring up the awareness, and also bring the opportunity for educating women to become angel investors.
Fantastic. Sherry, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Bruce.
Sherry Shannon Vanstone is the founder and CEO of Profound Impact. And we're having two conversations at once. One is the expansion of their matching program for funding and researchers. And second, the real opportunity for entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs, to get access to the capital that is going to have their businesses fly.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Stay with us. Coming up later, Phil Taylor from the Duke of Credit Union is going to take us through a rewards program that is innovative in that it is connected to the rates you can get on things like GICs. It's called Do More Profit Sharing. Interesting. But first, a conversation with vegan financial advisor Justin Manning about how he integrates veganism into his practice. Listen, if you like vegan food, if you like fashion, if you like design, how's that for a segue? You'll love this TV show called City Line. It has actually been around for decades. It's Canada's longest running daily lifestyle show. And I am so lucky. I get to be the money columnist there. I think it's been 9 years. Tune into City Line on City TV stations, or you can go to cityline.tv and watch some very, very practical advice on personal finance. But I don't know, throw pillows, makeup tips, fun with your kids, all that. And it is all very, very, very fun.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
You have certainly heard about veganism. You may have heard about vegan leather, vegan burgers, maybe. But have you ever heard of a vegan financial advisor? Justin Manning is exactly that. That is how he refers to himself. Though, like vegan leather, I kind of don't know what it means. So that's why he's here. He is here to tell us how he integrates veganism into his practice and some of the things he does for and with clients. He's in Langley, British Columbia today. Hello there.
Hello.
What does it mean to be a vegan financial advisor? I'm inferring that it means more than just following those practices in your personal life.
Yeah, it does. A good way to think about it is a slogan called cruelty-free commissions. So okay. In a world where financial planning and financial services is very abundant, being a vegan financial advisor speaks to a certain group of people who really value certain alignment and shared interests. And that's what it means.
In your initial conversations with clients, how do you assess whether or not there is a fit? Does a client need to be vegan to work with you?
No, clients don't need to be vegan for us to work together. There are plenty of current clients that I have that, you know, would not identify as such, but in terms of a fit, it's really about getting to know the person. Everybody's different. Everybody's on their own path, on their own journey. And it's really a matter of finding a fit whereby folks are open-minded. You know, I'm not perfect. No one's perfect. So it's really about having an open mind and trying to be better.
How do you integrate veganism into your practice? If you ran a restaurant, super easy, like really, really clear. There's the menu. There's no meat products on it, right? But in this case, how do you integrate it?
Yeah, so back to this whole cruelty-free commissions piece, it's integrated in that way, in that when clients choose to work with myself or maybe other vegan financial advisors, they have the understanding that if they were to follow the money, them choosing to work with that individual or myself, the money is not going to be spent on things or services that don't align with their values. And so when you follow the money, that's sort of what it means. And then the other integration is commonly known as the socially responsible investing space, or the ESG, environmental social governance investing space. And it comes up in those conversations a lot. People thinking about the climate crisis, otherwise known as climate change, and how can their actions and where they're putting their money and the folks and the firms that they're choosing to work with, how do those people see these issues?
The most obvious, stock that I can think of would be something like Tyson Foods or maybe McDonald's, right? That they wouldn't fit within a portfolio that you would recommend to clients. But there are other names in which it would be a question mark because they may have, well, Maple Leaf Foods, they have sausages. They also have a huge business that is plant-based. How do you circle those squares?
Well, nothing, unfortunately, right now is perfect in this sphere of socially responsible investing 2.0, if we're going into the veganism, cruelty-free sphere. So nothing is perfect. Again, it comes back to, at least my perspective, is progress over perfection. And so where does, and each individual is going to be different in terms of their comfort level of certain positions, right? So it's really about progress over perfection.
Let's use Maple Leaf as an example, in that it's a name people recognize from the grocery store, if not from the stock market. Would that be a name that you would recommend either as an individual name, or it just happens to appear in a particular index?
Well, that's the thing. I don't recommend individual stocks for folks. And so if that is a company in an overall index, then it comes to that conversation with that individual client. Is this of your comfort level? What's the weighting? How much of it, of the exposure, is in that portfolio, and what's your comfort level with it?
We began this conversation talking about veganism. We included socially responsible investing. How do you think about energy, fossil fuels, or alternative energy, given that it's connected, but it isn't the same as a vegan approach?
Yeah, exactly. Vegan might mean different things to different people. To your point earlier, a lot of people might think that that specifically means nutrition or food choices, where a lot of other people are very staunch in saying that veganism is not a diet. It is an overall lifestyle, which would include, to your point, entertainment, fashion, food, energy. And so, yeah, it's an important conversation. And in this space, there's a lot of what is known as greenwashing. So it is incredibly important to not take something at face value and, you know, lift up the hood, as they say, to see what's actually working underneath, and ensure that there is no greenwashing happening. And one example to your point about energy is the EV space, the electronic vehicle space, and going deep into what does it take to actually produce lithium, and what is involved in that. For those who don't know, lithium is referred to in some spheres as white oil, and the labor-intensive processes, environmental processes that are required to extract lithium. And so it's a complex conversation.
Yeah. And you have a you have an extraordinary gathering of people who follow a vegan lifestyle, and you have an incredibly diverse group of people. So you have some in that room who come to it from a political. I have a friend who came to veganism from a political perspective, and is a terribly unhealthy eater. It's like bag of chips for dinner. And then I have other friends who couldn't care about the politics. They're all about my body as a temple, and so this is how I'm doing it. And I'm making a false dichotomy there, just to illustrate a point. When you think about your choice to pursue that lifestyle, how is it for you? How did you come to that choice? And how would you articulate what it means for you?
Get to myself in a second. I'm a believer that regardless how somebody comes to considering being open-minded, or maybe full going toward veganism themselves and living that out, however they come to it, I am totally okay with. If it's going to benefit the environment, if it's going to benefit human health, if it's going to benefit animal health, regardless of someone's decision to do so, I think that that's a win-win-win. And so for me, earlier on, I was running a full marathon for blood cancer research. I ended up coming out of that with a stress fracture in my leg. I ballooned up near 65 pounds. That was the first time in my entire life that I really looked at nutrition and spent some time figuring that out for myself. And so I followed a apparently since debunked book called Eat Right for Your Blood Type. I was not vegan at that time, but I was more aware of nutrition for myself. And over the span of a year, I dropped the 65 pounds and regained my ideal body weight, and then just happened to stumble along this thing called vegan. And tried it out for myself and realized immediately, wow, this is easy. Wow, this is delicious. I don't find it difficult at all. And a couple of weeks had went by, and as a licensed fitness coach at the time, I was blown away by the recovery time that I was experiencing and the lack of soreness and lack of inflammation. And so that kept me going. And then a documentary about the environment, and then a documentary about animals, and sort of reinforcing my decision. And here we are 13 years later.
Wow. I want to ask you, and I'm going to ask you this question because I think it will be in the minds of our listeners. And that is, how do you address the potential trade-offs that you could be making because you are not recommending investment choices just for the money? So clearly, someone who is going to retain a vegan financial advisor has a more holistic view of the role that their money plays in their life and in the context of our world. How do you talk about or think about the potential trade-offs? Because I don't think it's proven that following, you know, an investment strategy that does have some limits on the kinds of investment it does, I don't think that's, you know, settled in either direction.
Yeah, I understand that question. And if that question was posed to me 5-10 years ago, the facts would have stated that yes, taking a position that does value, you know, the planet and people over profit, you might very well sort of for certain be giving up some returns in order to do so and put yourself in that type of a position. Fast forward to where we are today. And moving forward into the future, I don't think that it's going to get anything but better. Even so, companies that are not mandating, again, not the greenwashing version of ESG and socially responsible, but the real versions, companies that are not implementing those into their practices, I think we're actually going to see those companies suffering and those investors in those portfolios actually having less returns. Than those who are putting themselves in a position to benefit the planet.
Just one last question before we go. Do you approach the investing universe from a top-down or a bottom-up perspective? So said another way, are you looking for companies that fully deliver on what you're talking about? Or do you look at that whole group of, you know, the Fortune 500 or the TSX or whatever? And I know you don't recommend specific stocks, but let's say the top indices that people could invest in or mutual funds that they invest in, and then just filter out who doesn't fit the criteria. Which approach do you follow?
Well, there's a couple different approaches, and it's, again, going to sort of depend on the client. My specialty in the financial planning space is actually in the risk management insurance side of the space. And so that's my specialty. So when it comes to recommending portfolios and top down, bottom up, I'm actually going to be bringing in. So part of the value that I bring to the table for clients is I'm really good at what I do. And when it comes to specific investment management choices, tax planning, estate planning, if we're talking about a lawyer, is bringing in those pieces to the puzzle because I'm Justin Manning. I can't be all things to all people. And so to answer your question, I'd be bringing in the specialists for that part of the conversation.
Do you have a copy of Thug Kitchen?
Of course. I think we have both the newer version and the older one.
For those people who have not ever embarked on a vegan, recipe hunt, it's one of the best, but it's hilarious. I was reading it on the subway and I was cackling out loud as I read through recipes, which would never have occurred to me in my life. Justin, that's the time that we have. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Justin Manning calls himself the vegan investor. So we're spending some time talking about what that actually means in practice. Stay with us. Coming up, Phil Taylor from Duka is going to be here to talk about their new rewards program. Get this. You can earn and use rewards to qualify for better rates on GICs and loans and stuff like that. Very interesting approach. On the content front, on the personal finance front, I'm also the money columnist for CBC Radio. And so every Wednesday afternoon, we dig into a topic relative to you and to your financial life, often about what's occurring in the news that day. So we could meet there too, you know, toggle back and forth between CBC and SiriusXM. How's that?
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Everyone wants better rates when it comes to fixed income investments. And for years, it was almost impossible because we were in such a low rate environment. now. It's a little bit easier. There are rates that are a little bit more appetizing. But the other thing about our culture is everyone loves a rewards program. It's almost as Canadian as Tim Hortons, our obsession with rewards programs. So this idea is interesting because it brings those two ideas together. And it comes from an organization called Duka. Duka is a credit union. It has this new profit share rewards program that brings together rewards and a bunch of other benefits. It's called Do More Profit Sharing. And to talk about it, we're joined by Phil Taylor. He is Chief Member Experience Officer at Duka. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Bruce and everyone else.
Duka is a credit union. Tell us more about that name, because it may not be one that's familiar to everybody.
Yeah, so Duka is a credit union over 60 years old. It's been in Ontario for quite some time. Duka stands for Dutch Canadian, and so it was founded over 60 years ago to help immigrated Dutch Canadians get banked here in Canada.
Credit Canada, where I work, has a history with Duka, and so we know firsthand the commitment that your organization has to making a difference and also innovating. And this, I think, would certainly fit within the category of innovations, because I've never heard anything like it before. First of all, tell us how one earns in the context of this rewards program. So at Tim's, we know we buy a donut, we have a little card, you don't stamp it anymore, it's all digital. But how do you earn in this context?
Sure, I'll answer that, but I want to step back a bit further first. So you talked about Duka wanting to do more and help in its communities and things of that nature. So what we really, really care about at Duka is helping our members do more, be more, and achieve more. It's kind of our tagline. You'll hear it, you'll see it, but we really live by it. We feel it, we live by it. And yeah, you walk into one of our branches, call our call center, and you always get an experience that's really dictated towards our member and making sure we're providing the best experience possible. And this program is actually just encapsulating that and taking it to the next level. So the way you actually earn rewards is by doing more with Duka. So it's based on interest earned and interest paid. So how much interest you paid in a mortgage product, or how much interest you've earned through investments with Duka, and then it's calculated and you get your rewards based on that business. So the more you do, the more you get.
Okay. And connect this to credit union culture throughout Duka's 60 years and through other credit unions who operate in this country. There's always, mostly a relationship between the profitability of the credit union and what its members receive in the form of, I assume, in a check?
Yeah, well, so this is different. It's not a check, it's going into a reward system now. That is the nuance. So you think about a big bank, they're paying a shareholder. They're looking to make money to pay a shareholder. Our shareholders are our members. So as a member, you're an owner. And so what we do is we take that profit and we're giving a part of that profit back to our membership through the gaze of rewards. It's very easy to use. It's simplistic. And I'll tell you, I mean, you get these rewards and you can use it to buy up a GIC, so you can get a much better rate on a GIC product, or you can use it to buy down or pay down a mortgage product, so you'll get a better rate on your mortgage, or you can take it out in cash equivalent. So right. So any, you have three ways to use it. And it's the more you do with us, the more you get, and the more you get, the more you can do.
Right. And another credit union would similarly share profit back to members, but they would have one option, which would be a check.
A check, or in form of a dividends or different shares in the organization.
Yeah. Right. So give us a sense of the order of magnitude here. So let's talk about a GIC, which I don't think anyone was talking about for the last 5 years, because why would you want one of those? This is like ridiculous. Yeah. But now they're kind of a big idea. So I don't want to have you commit to rates because they move every second, but there is the level of rate that is X if you are participating in the rewards program and you do all the things and you're like the most amazing rewards earner ever. What's the X plus that you could see on a GIC?
So I'm not going to get into particulars about the actual rate because it does vary by how much you're making the GIC worth. It's actually a fairly, I want to say complicated, but it's a very robust system. But right. Online, on our Duka.com, you can actually go in and play with the system, and it will tell you, if I put this much money in and I have this many rewards, here's the rate I can get. I'll give you a real life example, however. The first one that I seen go through when we first launched this program was a colleague, and he wanted to be the first person to use the system, and he bought up his rate from a 4.75, don't quote me exactly, to 10. to around 10% on his GIC.
Okay.
Yes. He had quite a few rewards that he was able to use, and based on the value of the GIC, he was able to buy it up a substantial margin.
That's significant. So you mentioned the GIC, you mentioned mortgage. Is there an application here that could relate to credit cards?
Not currently.
Okay.
Yeah, not currently. That is not in scope currently. Right now it's dictated to the three products I outlined. So GICs, mortgages, and cash equivalent.
Every organization who offers a rewards program has to think about the cost and the benefits. So at Tim Hortons, it's super simple because they are able to quantify if I buy 10 apple fritters, and I do, then I earn a free one or whatever the math is. In layman's terms, how do you determine cost versus benefit on whether I get, you know, an additional 1 percentage point on my GIC or 10 basis points on my GIC?
Yeah. So there's a calculator behind the system, and it really is based on how much business you do this. So the more deposits you have with us and the interest that you've earned, the more rewards you're going to get off that. It truly is secular. So we have a percentage based from our treasury folks of how much we give back on a yearly basis based on earnings and how the organization is done. And then you overlay that with the reward system, how much you've earned as an interest as a consumer, and those calculations come out into your rewards.
This is a program for members, correct?
Members and members only, yes.
So it's not like you can swing by the Tim Hortons and just, you know, be a casual collector of rewards. This takes more of a commitment. You have to open up an account. You have to become a member. You have to actually, have a portion of your financial life with Duka. How big do you see this growing? I mean, I know Duka is on a bit of a tear. Do you think this is going to lead to an acceleration in that?
I would hope so. So listen, the reward system is one component of Duka, but I would encourage everybody to take a look at Duka or credit unions in general. I do believe that there is a movement afoot that people want to feel a little closer to their money, feel a little more valued and taken care of when it comes to their financial needs. And credit unions in general, but Duka specifically, really, really does focus on our membership. And this is just an extension of us focusing on our member. The more you do, the more you get, the more you get, the more you do. So I think that this is just a nice additional benefit that makes the idea of the credit union space and the idea of Duka even more enticing. And so Duka has been on a tear. You're right, Duka. We've been growing exponentially over the last 5 years. And I think this is going to be a nice added benefit and added feature to help us grow even faster.
We're not going to go through all of the terms and conditions. There's lots of places I'm sure that people can find out all the nitty gritty and all the details. But I do want to ask, are there any, caveats or asterisks that people should be aware of? You've got flex rewards and registered rewards. Are there other things that people should know about redeeming their balance? Things like that.
I'm glad that you mentioned the flex and the registered. That is really the only caveat. So if you have registered rewards, you have to use those towards registered products, and flex rewards can be used towards flex products. And what that means is registered is like an RSP, registered to the government, and so there's stipulations and regulations beyond that, and flex is non-registered. So those two are mutually exclusive and how you can redeem.
What about tax implications? Is this income? How do I think about that?
No, it's not income. That's why, it's because we're doing it in the form of rate up, increases the rate buy down. So there's no tax implication to that in particular.
If I had taken it as a check, would it be taxable? Is that income taxable if I'd taken it as a check in the old world?
Yeah, if you're, anytime you get a check or income above a certain threshold, I'm not an accountant. I don't even pretend to play one on TV, but value that you've earned, if it's over a certain threshold, there are tax implications.
How complicated was it to think this through, the technology, the marketing, the positioning? Because to me, it seems like a genius idea, but if it was simple, wouldn't it have been done 10 years ago?
So it wasn't simple. It's not, the calculations behind it. So our finance folks, our treasury folks, the folks that, put the nuts and bolts behind this, the mechanical side of it, are brilliant. And if it was up to me, this wouldn't have got done. But from a member perspective, it's actually quite beautiful in its simplicity. because it, once you're logged into your account, you see your rewards, or they're very prevalent in your login screen. Tells you exactly what you got, why you got it, how you got it, and what you can use it for. You click a few buttons, and it's quite easy to use. Mm-hmm. Now the background, the mechanic, of course, the finance and treasury components, there's some complexity there, and that's why it takes a bit of time to get something like this out. But from a member perspective, what's beautiful about it is the simplicity of it.
I'm sure a higher rate on your GIC is compelling, but could you also add the apple fritter? Is that a partnership that could happen?
I'm a steep tea guy from Tim Hortons myself. So,
All right. I can't feel like that calorie count is insufficient for me, but we embrace the diversity of how people, their little guilty pleasures.
If you twist my arm far enough, it'll be a chocolate glazed donut, but don't tell anyone.
All right. At least you didn't say a duchy, because if you'd said a duchy, I would have been like, I don't know. I don't know if we can speak any longer. Phil, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. Awesome, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bruce. Have a great day.
Phil Taylor is the Chief Member Experience Officer at Duka. And we were here to talk about this rewards program they've got. It's called Do More Profit Sharing. And it effectively allows you to earn better rates on some things, in particular the GIC, based on your financial dealings with Duka as an organization. Really interesting idea. That is it for our show for today. Thank you to our sponsors, Credit Canada, of course, Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. If you have a comment, a question, feedback, or you just want to share your favorite donut at Tim Hortons, then please send us an email, ask@moolala.ca. You can also sign up for our newsletter. That's at moolala.ca. And to ensure that you never miss an episode and you get the rewards of listening to Moolala episodes over time, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you are a social media person on Twitter/X, I'm at Bruce Selry, SELLERY. On Facebook, Bruce Selry Moolala. Thank you for listening and have a great day.